the fact that he started the season with a goal and we're one game in and he's one of a number of Flames who's on pace for 82 points. And I say that, I say that, of course, tongue in cheek, but for a guy who has been so maligned in his first two seasons here, Wes, and for a guy that has taken so much heat and so much criticism in his first couple of years here, for him to start the season with a goal and for him to start the season on sort of a right foot, there is definitely some merit in that and nothing negative about that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, the goal itself, like you said, quick reaction. Gimme range, if we're using a golf term, it was gimme range. But he actually, if you go back and watch the replay, he starts the whole sequence by winning a race to a loose puck along the boards, protecting it well, gaining possession for his team, and then he goes straight to the crease. And so there's more that went into the goal than just the little whack that knocked it across the goal line. But I totally agree with you. Like, the nobody is saying, and I wrote something on Jonathan Huberdeau. You can find it on the Post Media sites. Like, I'm very careful to say nobody's declaring that Jonathan Huberdeau, because he scored the fifth goal in a 6-5 overtime win, is back, or that he's going to, you know, produce X amount of points this year or anything like that. But I am a believer in sort of starting on a positive note and what it can do for a guy who needs to run on some positivity, who has talked now for two summers in a row about working really hard to rebuild his confidence in the off season. And I know he's done a ton of stuff with mental performance coaches. As you can find in the feature I wrote today, you know, we had a really fascinating conversation about watching sports documentaries on Netflix and sort of just putting himself in the shoes. Like, he's been watching Sprint and he's been watching Receiver, one obviously on the 100-meter specialist, the other on some of the top pass catchers in the NFL, and sort of focusing in on the fact that, as he put it to me, if you don't follow these sports, you don't necessarily know about the adversity the athletes have gone through. You just hear about who's doing really well. And it's, you know, it's sort of illuminating to know that lots of top athletes have come out of the other side of some poor seasons or some poor performances. And so I just think I find Jonathan Huberdeau really insightful. I know he's very accountable. I always enjoy chatting with him, and I'm really curious to see where he can take this year. And I thought game one was such a positive start. There's the goal. It led the team, led Flames forwards with four shots on net. I thought, as you said, that line with Mantha and Martin Pospisil just got stronger as the night wore on. You know, where does it go? Are we talking about Jonathan Huberdeau with 6 points in six games? Are we talking about him with the 1 point in six games? I really don't know where it goes from here.
Yeah.
But he's one of many guys, and of course with his cap hit, it's extra significant. One of many guys who I think had a really encouraging start to the season.
Spoke a little bit about that after an off-ice workout Thursday morning. Talked about his line, how they came together, and then a certain person asked him about starting the season with a goal.
It was good. I think we created some, you know, offensive opportunity, and I think, you know, we didn't give up too much as well. So, you know, I liked it. I think we play in our zone. We're going to play a hard game, and, you know, that's what we're going to keep doing.
What's a big timely goal on night one do for you personally?
I mean, that was good. I think, you know, I think I worked hard all game long, and, you know, doing the little things. And, you know, I guess you got to go to the crease to get a goal. You know, that got fortunate bounce. Obviously, would have liked to end it there, you know, for the winning goal. But it's, you know, that's the type of game. I think it was, you know, a great game for us. And, you know, I just like this, you know, the way we kind of handled everything. And, you know, we got it. And it's, I think it's a huge boost for us to win that game like that.
And big boost for the team. And we've talked a lot about, Wes, how maybe getting off to a good start could really help propel this group, especially knowing the expectations and that they're not high and all that type of stuff. A good start could absolutely, you know, help propel them and maybe can continue the whole discussion about them surprising the hockey world. And I said this, I don't remember when I said this, a few weeks ago. I just wonder if the same things that we're talking about with the Flames at large and with the lack of external spotlight and the lack of external expectations, and it just, there's a whole lot less external pressure on the team right now. Same can be said about Jonathan Huberdeau, the individual, because he's had two rough seasons here, because there's not much of an expectation on the outside for the Flames to do all that well, because the spotlight on Jonathan Huberdeau is far less bright than it has been the last two seasons. You know, you factor in all of those things. I wonder if the conditions aren't right for him to also get off to a good start. It's one game, and much like the team, one game does not equal 82 games and an entire season. But I do wonder what the benefit is of Jonathan getting off to a nice start, which he did, and certainly by the third period was playing his best hockey of last night's game as well.
Yeah, he's a guy, and this is something my colleague Danny Austin and I chatted about during training camp. You know, how often would the highest paid player on the team and a guy who had 50-some points last season, 52 to be precise, like, how often would a guy who fits that profile do as little media as Jonathan Huberdeau was asked to do during training camp, right? We must have talked to Jonathan Huberdeau every
once or twice,
second or third day for two seasons.
And once and or then, twice in training camp.
Yeah, like it was really rare. And I even asked him about that. And he said, you know, I'm paraphrasing just slightly here, but he said, when you've had two seasons like I just have, people think, oh, well, that's what you are as a player now. And maybe that's fair. I certainly get why people think that is the new Jonathan Huberdeau, 50-some points. But the Calgary Flames remain invested, obviously, in trying to get some more productivity out of him. And as we'll talk about in a minute, that's not going to be all goals and assists. There's an investment there, and there remains an investment by Huberdeau, as you'd expect for a guy signed for seven more seasons to get the most out of himself. And
yep.
I think he's come up with some creative ways to try to do that. Now, this is, again, it's one game, and I don't know where it goes from here, but it'd be a lot better than sitting and having the other conversation about Jonathan Huberdeau, right? There's the first period play last night, which was very un-Huberdeau, where he has a little 2-on-0 down low after a breakdown, and he puts a pass right in Connor's area, skates. Like, for a guy who I consider still to be the best passer on the team, it was pretty rotten pass by NHL standards. But to see him really have an impact on the game later into the second and the third, I think it's a really good sign.
A text camp comes in and says, I really like the fact that he went to kind of a hard area to score the goal that he scored last night. It's true. He was right there in the crease, mm-hmm. and was battling and
yeah.
won a battle, and also showed some pretty impressive hand-eye
yeah.
by being engaged in a battle and still able to get his backhand on that puck to make it 5-4. That was a
for nice, sure.
pretty if he, skilly goal.
If he gets out-muscled by Carson Soucy there
yeah.
at the doorstep, we're not talking about it.
What'd you, just overall, what'd you make of the line? It was the first look in the regular season, and I think only our third look in game action of Pospisil down the middle between Mantha on the right and Huberdeau on the left. We talked last hour, the first hour of Thursday's program. We talked a ton about Anthony Mantha, his impressive Flames debut, Gordie Howe hat trick, gorgeous goal, fight that maybe could have settled the entire night down. What'd we make of the line, though, at 5-on-5? I thought they actually struggled. I thought Pospisil looked a little lost at times through the first 20-40 minutes. But then all of a sudden, as that second period went along and as the entire team got more into a rhythm, everybody was out of their rhythm for the first period. As everything got a little bit more normal into the second period, I thought that line started to come on, started to spend more time in the offensive zone, so on and so forth. And then into the third period where Not only did Huberdeau score the go-ahead goal, but Pospisil scored the goal that gave them the early third period life that allowed them to go on that run. So I thought it got better as the night went along, which gives me some optimism going into Saturday.
Yeah, and I thought it was really noteworthy that one of the comments that Ryan Huska made post-game was about the pace that Anthony Mantha played with. And I would say that's an accurate description, too, of Jonathan Huberdeau. They're not burners, don't get me wrong, but I think the appeal of having Martin Pospisil up the middle between those two is to really try to push the pace with both of them. And I think in the stages that you talked about that they started to look stronger, you know, that they started to impact the game even more as the night wore on, I thought that pace was evident. I did like that part.
Like what? What if Mantha is the right fit for Huberdeau? And I know that the overwhelming consensus from a lot of people on the outside, although there's been some texts that have come in and said, why is everybody just assuming that they're going to trade Mantha? You sign a guy to a one-year deal, and you sign him to a show-me deal, not just a show-me deal for Mantha to show the rest of the league. It's also a show-me deal. I remember when he joined you and I on July 1st, and he talked about, this is a show-me deal for me, and I've got to prove something. Well, maybe it's prove something to the Flames, and maybe there's a longer-term fit with Mantha and Calgary, and I could definitely see that being a realistic possibility if Mantha and Huberdeau, regardless of who the center is, if it's Pospisil or somebody else, regardless of that, if Mantha and Huberdeau show something, and if Anthony is one of the keys to help unlock Huberdeau and make him a far more dangerous, productive player than he's been, then maybe you do have to rethink the whole, oh, well, he's going to be traded by the deadline. Because that is a very widely held opinion in Flames land right now.
Yeah, you know, buddy, you and I have been doing this long enough that there's conversations that stick with you, right? Like there's pieces of interviews that you say 10 years later, I'll always remember this guy saying this, or I'll always remember this point. And one of the recent examples for me has been Anthony Mantha on Canada Day acknowledging with you and I on the air that consistency has been the question about him throughout his career. And you'll just so seldom hear a professional athlete mention on their own that the knock on them has been consistency. Like you just don't hear that. And so that really frames this discussion for me. Like Gordie Howe hat trick opening night, as debuts go, it can't get any better.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reason for optimism about how the line looked, about how Anthony Mantha as an individual looked. Because of Anthony Mantha's history as a guy who can be either a massive impact or a guy that you just don't notice enough, I need to see what the next one and the next one and the next one and the next one looks like. But this idea that if he's having a good season, it only matters to the Calgary Flames because of what you can recoup as an asset. With Jonathan Huberdeau signed for 7 more seasons, I just don't agree with that. Now, are you going to match Mantha to that and sign him for 7 more? No, absolutely not. But if you think there's some chemistry there, and if you think another couple of years of Anthony Mantha can help you maximize your investment in Jonathan Huberdeau, a contract you're not getting out of, so you're trying to maximize, then absolutely you have to consider it.
If the Flames are rebuilding, or if they are retooling, or if they are reloading, or they are revamping, or whatever other word you want to use about what this process is, the ideal endpoint and where they want to be and when they're back to being a more competitive group, if all things go according to plan, Jonathan Huberdeau is almost certainly going to be a part of it. You don't trade contracts like that very often, especially those that the first 2 years of a guy in a new city have been really lackluster. And mm-hmm. he has been, I give Jonathan all the credit in the world. Lou said it, Labardia said it to me after one of his scrums early in his first year. So maybe within the first month or so, it wasn't going well for Jonathan. And he came out and he talked about it. And I came away from that scrum and it's nodded my head. And Lou came up to me, as Lou does. He just kind of stands beside me and goes, accountability. And then just walk, and you're like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he is that accountability with his play has been there the entire, like, he doesn't need Pat or Wes or whoever on the text line or whoever on Twitter. He doesn't need us to tell him that it hasn't gone well. He knows it better than anybody. But as a result, that means he's probably here for the long term. And so there is more than good reason to try to get the most out of him and to get more out of him than the Flames have gotten for the first 2 years.
I actually think the accountability, while I admire it a ton, I think it's created...
Sometimes I think he's too hard on himself.
Well, I can only imagine when you stand in front of the microphones for 5 minutes and criticize yourself, sort of how low you kind of feel when you walk away from that. You know, when you stand there and beat yourself up the way Jonathan Huberdeau sometimes does, and, you know, we appreciate it in our position, you know, Jonathan Huberdeau, because of his star status and his contract, is always going to be a talking point in this city. But, you know, it's tough to toe that line between accountable and really just kind of letting yourself have it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's easy on his confidence, but we'll see. Last night's a good start. Where does it go? I keep repeating myself. Again, we're not saying Jonathan Huberdeau is back, but it's an encouraging start. And I think we're going to chat a little bit about...
I want to read this text.
Okay.
Because it plays very, very nicely. And I'll echo it. Does this mean that Huberdeau is back to where he was 3 seasons ago? I have no idea. But I don't think it's a negative. I think it's almost certainly a positive, but... I can guarantee you it is not a negative that he started off the season by scoring a big goal in Vancouver on Wednesday night. This text came in right near the beginning of our conversation at 960-960. It says, wasn't Huberdeau penalty killing last night as well? Indeed he was, Wes. 85 seconds of PK time. He was actually one of their more used forwards on the penalty kill on Wednesday night, which is not something that we've seen from him in his first 2 seasons as a member of the Flames.
You said 85 seconds?
Yeah, minute 25.
So 3 minutes and 15 seconds, okay? That's the stat I'm going to throw at you. 3 minutes and 15 seconds. That was how much time he spent on the ice last season
over
on the
82
penalty
games.
Kill.
Yeah, or 78 games or whatever it was.
This is something that in a couple of conversations I had with Jonathan Huberdeau in training camp actually came up consistently. It's something that he's excited about for a couple of reasons. One, he was a penalty killer in Florida and, you know, believes that it's an area he can help the team. And so he's excited about having an impact on the team by helping to keep the puck out of his own net. And he's also excited about the fact that he thinks it keeps him involved in games more, that you're not sitting there for stretches watching your buddies. Like last night is a game where if he wasn't on the penalty kill, I think he would have been parachuted out of that game. He basically could have gone to the locker room for the rest of the first period because his team was just penalty killing essentially the whole time. And he does believe it keeps him more involved that way.
Spoke a little bit about it on Thursday morning when, funny enough, Wes asked him about killing penalties. And yeah, he did play more than a third of his entire penalty killing time last season. He played more than a third of that in game one Wednesday in Vancouver.
I mean, I like it. I think, you know, obviously coming in here, there's a lot of guys that can, kill. And so I didn't get my opportunity, but, you know, I like that Husk is trusting me, you know, defensively. And I think I take pride in that. I think it's it keeps you involved, too, in the game. You know, you're always kind of out there, you know, power play PK, 5-on-5. So I like it. I mean, you know, hopefully I can be really good at it. But, you know, I felt good for my first game.
So that's Jonathan on his... On killing penalties on Wednesday. And it's funny, as he was answering that question from you, I was thinking to myself, I wonder, remember when we had Ryan Huska on in the summertime, right after they hired Brad Larsen as assistant coach, and Husk joined us here, and one of the things you asked him about was going to see Jonathan in Montreal. They had dinner together there, and I was like, I thought to myself, I wonder if that's something they talked about. I wonder if that's something that Jonathan pushed hard for at that dinner or something. Like, I don't know. I honestly have no idea, but it just popped into my head. Like, as he mentioned, like, I like the fact that Huska's trusting me defensively and trusting me in that spot. I know that Ryan spoke a little bit about that on Thursday morning as well. I find it interesting that, you know, they did have a really good sit down, because they're here's a situation where they really do want to get a guy more on track. And maybe this is a way that they can help, because it gives you an extra, in this case, gave him an extra 80 seconds of ice time last night.
Yeah. And what I think it can do is give him another role where he's feeling like he's having an impact. And so what I mean by that is when you're just an offensive player, like when you're just judged on how many points you get and you haven't had a point in a few games, you, I think, have a tendency to feel like, well, what am I doing for this team? Like, what, I have one job here and it's to produce offense, and how am I helping? And I think as we talk about the recipe for any player to keep their confidence high, part of that can be having roles where you feel like you're helping, having roles where, you know, something you can kind of hang your hat on in some ways. And I know there's people driving down Deerfoot screaming at their radios right now that you don't need a $10.5 million penalty killer. I get all that, but I think this is one way that Jonathan Huberdeau can feel like he's helping the team when he's not necessarily putting up points. Is he ultimately going to be judged more than anything on points? Absolutely. He needs to be a huge part of a resurgent power play. He needs to put up more than the 52 points he had last season. He, you know, he needs to tee up his new line mate, Anthony Mantha, for that wicked one. Like, there's a bunch of things that we've been harping on for weeks that we need to see from Jonathan Huberdeau. But if a regular shift on the penalty kill kind of helps him get to more of that,
yeah,
I think it's a potential boon for this Flames team.
Text line. I was laughing because Shub's text in at 960-960. Actually, Wes, I'm on Barlow.
Yeah, that was quite funny.
It's not bad.
Excuse me. Kyle in Citadel, not a fan of our what we're talking about. Guys, I'm sorry, but are you paid a bonus for talking positively about Huberdeau? He's not an adaptable player. Taking responsibility for bad play isn't the same as doing something about it. Everyone said, oh, this year is his year. If you say it enough, maybe it'll happen. But come on, he's just not a good, dependable, adaptable player. Sure, a garbage goal is still a goal, but I disagree with everything you've said, respectively. So Kyle, not on board with where... And look, I don't think either of us have said that everything's fixed now and Jonathan Huberdeau is going to double his point total from last year. What we're saying is Wednesday's game, knowing how maligned he's been for the last 2 years, knowing how disastrous it's been for the last 2 years, him starting the year in game one with a goal, there's potentially some positive in that and definitely no negative in that.
Yeah, I mean, I keep reiterating, like, I understand the cap hit. I understand, and I'm not characterizing Kyle this way, but I understand there's fans who don't want to hear anything about Jonathan Huberdeau till he hits the 90 point mark. That I understand that there's some people who don't think you can highlight a positive with Huberdeau without mentioning, as we have numerous times, that his offensive totals in the past two seasons haven't been where the Flames expected or needed. I get all that. I just think this is a circumstance where you can. There were a lot of positives to come out of last night. There's a lot of reason for encouragement. And I think where Pat and I agree is that Jonathan Huberdeau's play and ultimately getting rewarded for it is one of those.
This reads from John from Airdrie. If Huberdeau can score 65 points and have a plus 25 plus minus, all good. Rick in Lakeview says, Pat, if Mr. Mantha pans out positively, I'm staking claim to the French Connection branding. Great effort last night. Super opener. Go retooled Flames. Go. Colin writes, if Mantha's on pace for 30 and Huberdeau sitting at 70 points, Mantha will get an offer from the Flames for multiple years. Matt and Cochrane says the Flames cannot be in the business of signing guys in their 30s to term. That's when talking about potentially bringing Mantha back. This from Imran, who says, does anyone else get Iginla vibes from Mantha? Strong, good shot, stands up for his teammates, gets better when he's more involved. Well, I mean, certainly on Wednesday night, he was all of those things. But, you know, we're talking about a guy who's over 30 now and who's been in this league for quite some time. The biggest thing, as Wes said earlier, is how many more nights? Look, do we expect a Gordie Howe hat trick from Anthony Mantha on every single night? Of course not.
I do.
Wes does. So that's a tough gauntlet. But I really appreciate a high bar.
Yeah.
But what I do think is important is that we see him impact the game positively far more often than not. And that has been something that has plagued Mantha at different spots and is partially why he's only on a one-year contract. And the best part about it, in my eyes, is that he knows it and he's aware of it. And to reference what you said, when he joined us on July 1st, that's a ton of self-awareness from a guy.
Yeah.
And self-awareness is a virtue. And being aware of it, well, that's the first step to being able to maybe change things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I vividly remember a game in Detroit where he did look like Jerome Iginla. It hasn't happened often enough. We're talking about a guy who was a healthy scratch in the playoffs last season for the Vegas Golden Knights, and that was despite scoring 20 in the regular season. And so it's going to be a sort of constant, what's the word I'm looking for? It's going to be something that is constantly on Ryan Huska's mind is how do I make sure that I keep this player engaged and motivated? I do think an expiring contract is going to help in that regard.
A few more quick texts. This one from Heath, who says, what game was Kyle watching? I'd like to see Kyle score a garbage goal in the NHL. This reads, Huberto can't score 90 without scoring one first. Let's hope this is the start of a turnaround. This reads, a garbage goal is a great way to break a slump. Small steps are still steps. This says, Pat, there are two Collins that text in. Can you put my contact in as Colin B? That way you can tell which Colin it is. You know what? I'll do that for you, Colin. Just made the change right now. You are now Colin B. And finally from Francesca, Huberto's a great example of how we dehumanize players sometimes. He isn't just his cap hit. If Huberto gets over this, even slightly, his experience will make him an extremely valuable part of this rebuild for young players to look up to.
I think there's a lot of logic to that. We always talk about the different experience guys have gone through. And, you know, if Jonathan Huberto sort of is proof that you can rebound to being more than what you're written off to be, I think that's something that he's going to be imparting on guys for years to come.
He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's good to have the NHL back, and you know you can catch hockey action all season long on Sportsnet Television, Sportsnet Radio, and Sportsnet Plus. And Rogers Beyond the Seat brings Rogers customers closer to the hottest sports and entertainment experiences. And to kick off this NHL season, Rogers is giving its customers and hockey fans across the country the chance to win a trip to any NHL game this season. That's right, any game this season. If that isn't enough, hundreds of other NHL prizes all season long. What do you got to lose? Just go enter. Enter for your chance to win at Rogers.com/NHL. One more time, Rogers.com/NHL. Contest closes on October 25th.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Happy Thursday, and on Thursdays, we get an opportunity to chat with our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley, from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. And the timing's worked out well over the last little bit. A couple weeks ago, Kevin was in Abbotsford, got eyes on looks at both of Dustin Wolf and Devin Cooley in preseason action. And on this Thursday, we're talking to Kevin Woodley after he had an eyes on look of the Flames and Canucks in a bonkers season opening game at Rogers Arena on Wednesday night. Welcome back to the program. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you. And on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline is our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley. That was an eventful night at Rogers Arena. Hey, how many times? I don't do the game stories, so I don't I don't really understand this. I just know that anytime there's a game with crazy swings, I see Wes's head start to light on fire. So how crazy was it for you with all those changes and all those swings last night?
Yeah, there was, it was get me rewrite, right? One of those nights. So, not much you can do. You just kind of bob along and try and keep up, and hopefully it all makes sense when you send it to the desk. But I could live without, you know, many more of those this season. It kind of reminded me of two seasons ago with the Canucks, where they would mount these furious third period comebacks, and you'd be writing it, like you'd be writing it all up, and then it would change at the end, and they blow it, and like the Flames come back, they go ahead, then they blow it, then they win anyways. Like it's just there's a lot of swings there to try and articulate in a succinct fashion. And as Wes has probably told you, this is a bit of a lost art for a lot of the writers, but there are still those of us that actually have to file at the buzzer and have that story on the desk and approved and ready to go online before we actually even go down to the locker room, which opens 5 to 10 minutes after that buzzer. So you don't have time to massage it. You just get it out, get it done, and hope it's legible.
What did you make of the game? What were your takeaways? Before we get into the two goaltenders, what were your takeaways from Wednesday night?
Well, I mean, I thought it was fun. The first period was fun because, I mean, there were chances at both ends. The power plays tilted the ice a little bit in the Canucks' favor. And you wondered, is this, because there's been a lot of talk here in Vancouver about, trying to create transition offense, trying to create more off the rush, trying to not open things up and become as loose as they did, but play a more up-tempo offensive generation game. And it's like, if this is what it's going to look like, sign me up. But along the way, I think they forgot what their identity was. And that's, they won with defense last year. And sometimes for the Canucks, defense is chipping it in. Like they defend by not defending. They spend time in your end. They don't try and force things off the rush. They pull up, they dump it in a corner, and they cycle you to death. And I think they lost a little bit of that, lost a little bit of the battles won. And the Flames, as they all said, were full value for sort of digging in and climbing back into it and starting to generate chances the other way. At the end of the night, Clearside Analytics had the chances high danger at 8-8. So as lopsided as it looked in the first, it was very much the other way from there on. And you're happy for that the Flames sort of got rewarded for that effort, because it could have really snowballed. I mean, I watched the Oilers Canucks opener last year that it ended up 8-1 Vancouver, and it felt like it might be one of those nights. And so for a young Flames team that a lot of people are counting out already to dig in that way, that's their full value for it.
I do have to ask you, we had you on a couple of weeks ago in that preseason game, and you got an opportunity to watch both Dustin Wolf and Devin Cooley play that night. Yet to see Dan Vladar in person since his hip surgery. You did on Wednesday. He went 61 minutes and 33 seconds. What'd you make of Dan Vladar's performance and just some of your observations in what you saw?
Well, I mean, talking a little bit, with the goalie coach about the way he played that game, like I thought there was a lot to like. Like the first one looks bad, but he screened, kind of a flash screen that his own sort of own defenseman pushes through him, and Sprong can shoot the puck. Like there's no hint of his release. It's just off his stick. You don't even know it's coming. And so I think you give him a pass on that one, especially because of the screen. Bit of a gong show around him on a couple of the other ones. Like I liked the way he moved. I thought he looked pretty good. I thought his skating was good. I didn't get rattled. As lopsided as it was, he dug in as well. So, there's some breakaway saves there. When it was 4-1, otherwise it could have gotten even more out of hand. So, I mean, for first one in a while for him that counts, I was impressed. I didn't mind. I mean, JT Miller coming down the wing gets countered as a low danger goal, but I don't know just because it's a clear sighted shot and it's one-on-one and there's no screen and there's no nothing. But what they don't factor in is the guy absolutely hammering a top cheese right over the corner. It's not like Vladar was sitting back on his goal line. He came out and challenged that one and JT just blew it by him. So I'm willing to, there's some people that might want to save there. I'm willing to tip my hat to the shooter every once in a while. And that's one of the, top 15 players in the league blasting away. I thought the mistake on that goal, honestly, and he doesn't make many of them, was Backlund sort of shooting it right into Quinn Hughes off the rush with plenty of time and space and the empty net. And that turnover gave Vancouver a chance to wheel it up in transition and give JT that look.
And the other goalie that we saw on Wednesday night was Artur Seelovs. Obviously, no Thatcher Demko right now to start the season. And we've talked lots about Seelovs going back to last season, Kevin, when he came in and kind of stabilized things for the Canucks in the playoffs when Demko went down. What did you make of Seelovs night? What were your observations on him?
Well, I mean, the observations kind of follow what happened in the playoffs here a little bit, and they happened in the preseason against the Flames, and I think the Flames were looking for it. And I wasn't sure this was going to be a big problem this year because I think sometimes teams come through town and it's one of 82. Like, the Flyers are here tomorrow night, and again, it's like first game of the season, but it's a team you don't play that often, and I just don't know how deeply teams in that situation pay attention to the pre-scout, but the Flames did. They were all over shots from the point, shots from distance with traffic. And right now that's the book on Seelovs. The Oilers wrote it in the second half of that series. A lot of goals sort of from distance with traffic, with screens. It's not all on the goaltender. Much like that Sprong shot, there were times the Canucks were in lanes, but not in the right side of the lane or not actually blocking a shot despite being there. All they were doing was taking away their goalie's eyes. I think their high forwards have to become better at shot blocking. If they're going to get in the lane and take away the goalie's eyes, you better eat that puck too. But this has been an issue, and it was an issue last night. And it certainly, given the way last season ended, for all the good he did, it was the one thing that sort of became a talking point. And having it go that way in the first game of the regular season, it's definitely not going away. I would not be surprised if we see Kevin Lankinen and get his first start for the Canucks tomorrow night against Philadelphia. And that may have been the plan all along. They want to get him in the mix. But when your numbers on screenshots are that sort of tilted and that underwater, and a team comes in and does that to you in the first one, it certainly raises not so much some doubts, but it makes it clear there's some things he has to work on. And I think by his accounting today and the coach's accounting today, like, they're willing to say games like that happen. But I think they recognize that a couple more saves and they've got a win instead of an OTL.
Yep. We're chatting with Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine, NHL.com. He joins us Thursdays. We're talking goaltending with Kevin here on Flames Talk, Wes.
Kevin, you mentioned the Flyers. You get to see them tomorrow in Vancouver. We get to see them here on Saturday at the Saddle Dome. What can you tell us about the goaltending situation in the city of brotherly love?
Well, I mean, this is a team that misses Carter Hart, right? Like, he was really good at the start of last season. And now that he's not in the league, Sam Harrison goes in and thought it gave them some really good minutes last year. He'll get the start here in Vancouver tomorrow night. He's their number one goaltender, but it was just too much too soon for him. And by the end of the season, it had taken a toll and they didn't have enough left in the tank to sort of get them into the playoffs. Now you hit restart for him. He learned a lot of lessons last year, and I'm expecting him because he's a really solid, structurally sound goaltender, like really good positionally, not flashy, but moves pretty well, just really efficient. He's like your prototypical Swedish goaltender, kind of by the book. But you're going to have to find nights to give him off. You can't run him into the ground, play the wheels off him the way they did last year. Even though he's got the experience, doesn't mean he's going to be ready to jump in. I mean, very few are, the way the league is going. And that's where, the questions come, because Ivan Fedotov, the big 6'7" Russian, struggled himself last year. I think he ended up with a save percentage in the low 800s in a very small sample. And that's who I expect you'll see in Calgary on Saturday. And I mean, he's massive. I watched him at practice today pretty closely. He moves pretty well. I just think, and ironically, traffic and tips, one of the things they have concerns with, and you'd think at 6'7", you just look over the traffic, but it really is hard. Once that puck gets low enough that you're moving into a save stance and you've got to look around, it's so much about knowing what side to pick and trusting that lane you're holding for eyes, your defensemen are going to take away the other lane. Like, it, traffic and tips are like traffic has become so hard for NHL goaltenders. It's one of the toughest things in the game to manage, and especially if you're new to it. And so his ability to sort of manage that and just read the game at this level, the pace of the NHL, there's question marks there. And so just as the Flames got a goalie with some question marks on opening night, I think they're going to get another one on Saturday night when the Flyers come to town.
We were talking in one of our earlier segments today, trying to put ourselves in the Flames coaching office and figure out who they start on Saturday. We kind of looked at it as maybe a Dustin Wolf game even before the season started. Which way, if it was your call, which way are you going for the Flames on Saturday?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, at the end of the day, so much of it depends on the relationship that the goalie coach has with the guys and sort of reading where they're at, how they're feeling and how they're looking. I watched Dustin practice at the morning skate yesterday. He was out there for a good 35, 40 minutes after the coaches, sort of while the coaches were talking and while the players were talking, after most of the guys were off the ice working with Jason, and just looking really energized and sharp and finding his details. My hunch would be I'd want to get him in the mix early. You know, there's a little part of me that's like, loves the way Vladar dug in and, you know, might want to feed him another one to see if he just get a bit of a rhythm there. I apologize for not knowing this in advance, but who's next for them and how long between Saturday and the next one?
Yeah, it's a great question. They're in Edmonton on Sunday, so they're going to need both guys.
Yeah, you know what? I'd be tempted to go Wolf Saturday then and Vladar on Sunday. I mean, it's so early in the season that it's not like you should be making the decision based on rest, but why not an extra day off?
Yeah.
Right? Like there's travel involved from Vancouver and back, short a trip as it is, but why not just have that extra day off? Yeah. Some coaches are different, right? Some coaches have starter backup and who gets the second end of back-to-backs and the hierarchy dictates that. But I think more and more teams around the league start to look at who's going to be freshest, and as early as it is, maybe that's a tiny, tiny factor, but it's one I think you would at least think about because of the back-to-back nature.
Kev, last one for you. You know, the Jeremy Swayman situation figured itself out. He ends up getting the 8-year contract with the Boston Bruins, but I am really curious your thoughts on Ottawa, given Linus Ullmark, Swayman's old running mate in Boston, giving him that big 4-year extension at 8.25 before he's played a game as a member of the Senators. What was your takeaway on that?
Well, I mean, the first thought is for everybody that said that Jeremy Swayman wasn't resetting the goalie bar, I would now argue differently. You know, just as sort of we had that run of goalie signing 5x5 deals as number ones or 5x6 deals, I think that this is going to be the new number for anyone who sort of brushes up against that elite category. And I've got Linus Ullmark in there. And, you know, I've said this about him going to Ottawa. The beauty of Linus Ullmark is he can play it both ways. He's played behind porous defensive teams in Buffalo. And his numbers relative to the environment were just as good there, maybe not quite, but almost as good there as they were in Boston behind a better defensive team. Just that most people can't see it because of the number of high-quality chances that he faced. So he's capable of doing it both ways. Like, he's been behind teams that aren't as tight. We've seen his leadership and some of the things he's done and the way he's sort of held himself in that room already in Ottawa. You know, even last year, like, his adjusted save percentage in the regular season was slightly better than Jeremy Swayman. So it's not like he fell off a cliff after the Vezina. He had a really good season. For all those reasons, I understand it. And yet, I'm with you. I understand the hesitancy as well. Why not wait? You know, it's that old adage, if you have time, right, use it. Unless there was a mandate there where once the season starts, he wasn't going to be willing to talk. You know, and some guys set that. Like, hey, once the season starts, contract talks are off, and he's a UFA next summer, and maybe they're worried about losing him. Like, I could see them just quite honestly falling in love with the person and everything he brings and just being like, let's get this done. But, you know, once bitten, twice shy, after what happened with Jonas Korpisalo last year, I understand why people, you know, might have liked to have seen them be a little more patient. I think this one ends a little better for them, just because I just know how good Linus is. And it doesn't matter. Even last year in Boston, like they were a lot more reliant on goaltending and a lot looser defensively last season. And both their goaltenders held up very well. Again, we don't see the numbers don't jump off the charts, especially for Allmark. But relative to the environment around him, he was excellent.
Great stuff, as always. Also excellent was Kevin Woodley. Great stuff, as always, my friend. Great stuff, and really appreciate the insight on the goalies here and around the league. Looking forward to seeing Philly in here on Saturday, and we'll do it again on Thursday of next week.
I got to add in, too, I appreciate you characterizing accurately the goal of the writers on a deadline like last night being legible, because that really is what we're going for, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Then there's guys like Ian McIntyre who used to have nights like that, and then I'd wake up the next morning pre-internet, and he'd actually work in like Snuffleupagus and spell it right without the internet to check. Like, so yeah, some guys just make it look easy. The rest of us, we just want to make sure it actually reads like we were at the game.
Yeah, we're just hoping they don't try and run it through Google Translate on the desk.
No, exactly.
Thanks, Kev. We'll talk next week, hey?
All the best, guys. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Absolutely. Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com out of Vancouver. He joins us on Thursdays here on Flames Talk, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3344 as we start to wrap things up this hour on the program. Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson, and our producers have been Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie. Thanks for hanging out with us this hour. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at calgarylockandsafe.com.